when my work went viral on Instagram and becoming a thing, I was super mega overwhelmed and super alone. Super mega alone.
Das ist der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast, der Podcast rund um Nachtleben und Clubkultur.
Wir sprechen mit DJs, Türstehern, Tänzern, Clubbetreibern und anderen Nachtmenschen.
Mein Name ist Gesine Kühne.
Und ich bin Jakob Töne.
Herzlich willkommen beim Electronic Beats Podcast.
Welcome to our Telekom Electronic Beats podcast. My name is Gesine Kühne and this episode is in English because our guest is a non-German speaker. She's from France, from Paris to be precise. Her name is Joanna Jaskowska. The 28-year-old female broke the internet. That's what I always say, because she invented a face filter that went through the roof. Over 500,000 people used it. It's called Beauty 3000, a very cyborg-esque futuristic Instagram filter, which is a major part of our conversation. How she became a face filter designer and what has changed in her life since she became famous through it. Just to mention one big name, even Billie Eilish knocked on her door to work with her. Well, I don't want to give you all the insights to the conversation I had with Joanna. You just have to listen to it. Salut, Joanna. Ça va?
Salut, ça va très bien. Merci, et vous?
Ça va bien. We are talking via Zoom because you are in Spain. What are you doing in Spain?
I'm living here.
Ah, okay.
I'm living here. Yeah, it's my next, my actual destination. Mm-hmm. And I really like Spain. I really like the people. I think it's a great place to live. I always lived in places where it was really gray and rainy. And actually, Spain is very good weather. And I don't know.
Whereabouts in Spain are you?
I'm in Madrid.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yes.
So full lockdown at the moment?
No.
No?
Okay. No. There is I think from today there is a curfew, but it's only from midnight to 6, so it's okay. I mean, it's life. It's regular, more or less regular life. I was in Paris last week, and the curfew is from 21 to 6 in the morning, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's a different story. Like, you don't have nightlife at all.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, this is the reason why we're talking via Zoom is I was supposed to visit you, but I said I don't want to fly at the moment and I don't want to go into quarantine. And it's a lot to think about if I want to do a work travel even, you know. So that's why Zoom works for me. It's always nice to see the people through the camera, even though it would be nicer to see you in person, of course.
Yeah, we have to keep up one day.
Yes. Your accent gives it away. And my poor French attempt in the beginning, because that's what I know, ça va bien, you know. You're French. You grew up in Paris.
Yeah.
And in 2016, you made your way to Berlin.
Yes.
First to work in an agency and second to break the internet through an Instagram filter, pretty much.
more or less. So basically my background in Paris, I grew up there. My mother came when she was 25. She she did the Beaux-Arts and then she was doing like the art restoration. There was no job. So I don't know. I grew up in the suburb of Paris, you know, like an immigrant family in the suburb of Paris was a lot of fun. But life is super hard in Paris, you know.
Yeah, it's very, very expensive, especially if you want to live in the inner circle of Paris.
Yeah, I was lucky to choose kind of young that I wanted to do art and design studies. Mm-hmm. So my baccalaureate, which is like the, you know, the main...
The Abitur.
The Abitur, yeah. I did it already specialized in art and design. Mm-hmm. So I saved 1 year and I had like really good marks. So I could make it I could made it in like a very good school in Paris for free. And I was helped. I had bourses, you know. So it was kind of okay. But like all my life, I was working. I had to work. I was working in a bar. I was working parties. I was doing tattoos. I was doing anything to make money to have a life, no?
It's interesting. I mean, you also, your name gives it away. You have Polish roots. So your parents are emigrated from Poland to France?
Yeah.
Okay. Both of them are Polish.
Exactly. My mom is from Krakow. Mm-hmm. And my all the family from my mom's side. And my mom came to do the fine art school in Paris. And she was pretty young, but back in the days, the situation in Poland was really bad. And my grandfather called my mom and said, "You should stay in Paris. It's much better if you stay." So she stayed and she made her life there. She had my sister, she had me, and and voilà. My father is a different story because I met him last year.
Oh, okay. So your parents were separated quite young after having the kids.
No, actually. So my sister and I, we have different father, and it's okay, another story.
Yeah.
But basically, when my mom and my father met, they were dancing together. They had a short story. And my father back in the days was a hard worker. He was traveling a lot and he moved. And after that, my mother realized that she was pregnant from me.
Okay.
And there was no Facebook, there was no Instagram, there was no way to contact people. So they lost each other. And I don't know, I think it was end of 2018. I wanted to know. I'm very curious as a person. And I started to do my researches. And I had a wrong name. Like a wrong spelling name. So it was really hard to find anything. But like somehow, like I digged the internet and I found him. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to send a message. If it's him, it's cool. I'm going to meet him. And if it's not him, I tried. So I tried and it was him. And last year in August, we met and he remembers everything. He's so happy to have a daughter. He feels sad that he missed all my youth, because it's the best of children's, no? Like when you grow up, see you're growing, and I'm already like achieved. I'm an adult. I know what I'm doing, where I'm going, etc., etc. So, but he's very happy, and he recognized me by the law. So I have officially a father.
Oh, that's
which
amazing.
Is crazy.
Yeah. Congratulations. I mean, I wasn't. I really didn't know what kind of wasp nest I'm going to poke just to ask about your parents, but that's a really nice story, and I can tell everyone who is listening that you're glowing when you're talking about that story. It's really, really nice to see that it was such a happy end. You said it before, your mom is already an artist. She's very artsy, so that was in your household. Art was a part of your upbringing, I figure. But can you recall if there was also like an early interest in robots, like a toy, for example? Because I see you as someone who is so interested in cyborgs. You have this fascination. Maybe there was a robot story somewhere in your youth.
Not at all. Not at
okay.
all. I mean, we grew up in a really modest family, and I had like the regular Barbie toys and like, but never had like super technical. And back in the days, I don't know, in the early 2000 year, robots were really expensive. So it's not the kind of tough I would have. I was more into video games. I was more into like computers, hacking things, finding games for free, like you know, downloading illegally things to have like all the games. That's how I started with computer. Like back in the days, we had one computer and one, I think we had a Dreamcast. It's the only game console, how to say that,
Yeah, console, you can say that. Console is the German word, so everyone will understand, I guess.
So it was the only thing I had, and I remember that we found a way to download games online. And then like put them on a CD, and with the Dreamcast there was like a hack to do so we could have all the games we wanted, so it was really nice. And computers, no? Like,
yeah.
It was so much fun back in the days. It was the best time of the internet.
And besides that, were there also shows or movies that you watched that were also very nerdy? I don't know. I can't say which one now. I have a couple in my mind, but I don't recall their names anymore. There's something sci-fi, something computer, something very nerdy, something futuristic. What we were thinking as an utopia when we watched it, but it's actually now it's reality. You know, maybe you had something like that as well.
The shows I was watching when I was young was more like a family. It was a family meeting, no? Mm-hmm. It was like every Friday or every Tuesday evening at this time, and we were like cooking something and watching the show. So it was for the whole family. It was not really something I was like really obsessed with. And it was different times. Like back in the days, there was no Netflix. There was no. You didn't have access to everything. You were just like following what is on the TV and what is the program this day. So with the family, we were watching, like, for example, Stargate. That was really sci-fi, super, super cool with the Goa'uld and like futuristic things. But we were watching like whatever fits to the family, no? I don't know.
Yeah.
Dr. House. Or my favorite shows when I was really, really young was Tomb Raider, Xenia the Adventurer, or this kind of thing. Yeah.
So like strong female futuristic fighters, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. Not really futuristic, but like strong female fighters. I really liked that when I was young. Or Buffy. I mean, this is like lot of nostalgia, but it was fun. Yeah. Or Charmed.
With the great intro by The Smith. I love the score so much. Yes.
Yeah, me too.
How old were you when you got your first computer or laptop? I mean, you said you did so much hacking to get games for free.
I guess 12. I don't know. The boyfriend of my sister was working in, he was fixing computers. So we had, you know, we had like some computers that you could like have different parts and build a computer like this. So that was I think he introduced me to computers and video games. I was playing with him video games when I was like, I don't know, 10, 12. And this is how I learn. And then when you learn, then you do it yourself. And then you grow by knowing how to do it without even knowing how you learn, you know?
Yeah. You're 28 now, right? Yes. So 10 years ago, Instagram started. It was just the 10 years anniversary of Instagram.
True.
So you were 18. Did you get right into Instagram, or didn't you have a smartphone yet?
No, I had a smartphone for sure. But back in the days when Instagram started, it was Facebook was more popular.
Mm-hmm.
So we were using Facebook for everything, for events mostly, for groups, for things like this, like friends. And Instagram, I think I had one, but I was not really active on it. It was not very popular at the beginning in France,
Instagram. Yeah. I remember that people were using it, but not until 2012 or 2013 that a couple people really got into it.
Yeah.
Like using the photo platform to get away from Facebook, where it was getting more and more opinionated and like posting articles and so on. It was just about pictures and nothing else. I mean, now Instagram has completely changed again, where it's also a very political platform, which is great that it's not only, you know, looking beautiful,
yeah,
but you can actually use your followers, your strength to change political stuff or get people to acknowledge
it changed things. So much.
Yeah.
It's a real deal now. Like,
yeah,
it's so big. It's crazy. And it changed the society as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think so too. Let's think, like shitstorms, for example. You really, as someone who is an influencer or has like a great number of followers, you actually think twice about the stuff you post, about your wording, about pretty much anything, not to be political correct so you don't get a shitstorm, but like, for example, I do think a lot about my post that I don't hurt anyone with the stuff I say. Which is nice if you are so aware and reflecting that you actually start like asking yourself, is that still the right thing to say? You know, is this abusive language? Is this this? Is this that? That's really, really cool. But it gets also overwhelming, I guess, for a lot of people because there's so much information flowing through Instagram every single day.
It is super overwhelming. And when my work went viral on Instagram and I've seen my, you know, all of these followers and people like interacting with me and becoming a thing, I was super mega overwhelmed and super alone, super mega alone. Like, and everybody's saying like, oh, this is great. This is success. Everybody wants that. But man, it's tough. It's not easy. It's not easy. And it needs time, like every transition, you need time to reflect, to understand, to understand how things works, because this is a new reality. It's not your previous reality. You don't use Instagram the same way. You don't talk about the same things. I had to learn how to don't talk to people. Because I'm super nice.
Don't be too nice. Otherwise, people will take advantage of you.
Exactly.
It's very important. I mean, it's the internet. It's virtual reality. It's not real life. Most people probably wouldn't be your friends in real life. So that's a thing, especially teenagers need to learn these days. I mean, if you say you're 28 and your success started 2 years ago, when you say it as a mid-20, like a strong female, smart, strong female, you said you were overwhelmed. Just think about a 15-year-old, you know, something we have to learn, we have to integrate into our lives. And I'm of the opinion that, for example, in schools, there should be something like a media class, you know, where you learn about appropriate handling of social media, for example.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it's so new and it goes so fast, and establish things like this takes some time. And we might want to establish something like this today, but in 2 years it's going to be a different thing again.
Outdated already, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's pretty strange. I mean, I think there is a gap of generation. My sister is 9 years older than me, and I can see that we don't use these social tools and like the new technologies. We don't use them in the same way. We have the completely different lifestyle and completely different way to communicate with each other. And it's just 9 years. It's nothing. Like, it's not so much, but there is a gap of generation. And I think teachers, if they want to teach this to younger generation, they wouldn't even understand how this generation works. I'm 28. I'm in between. I'm the generation in between. So I grew up without all of these social media tools and like technologies. And I've seen it from the beginning to now. But the generation that like grew up already with those tools and those social media that are super addictive, they are a different generation. Mm-hmm. And I always think it's important to respect the new generation because the human being has this capability to adapt itself to mm-hmm. its environment and to the world, to the reality of the world. And I don't want to be like a conservative and say like, oh, it was better before, da, da, da. I mean, our grandparents didn't like when our parents were listening to punk music, no? Mm-hmm. It was completely unacceptable. But today we respect that this is a very strong and interesting culture and this is how the world is. And you can't condemn someone to listen to punk music or to use social media in one way or another. It's a different generation, different perspective, different reality.
So do you think we need to talk more between the generations to make the younger mind accessible to an older mind, for example, to completely understand how are we gonna close the gap? Because I mean, this is important that we talk to each other, that we learn from each other. Otherwise, we'll be ending up in a huge fight of generations clashing. I mean, it's already happening, you know. You follow social media properly, you can totally tell what's going on. How are we going to close this gap? How are we going to talk?
I think communication is key. I mean, real communication. The way I talk to my mother, she understands me. There's things she don't understand, but I'm honest and I'm communicating and I'm explaining my point of view on things, and you accept it, and you if you have a good communication with the people that surround you, it's okay, I guess.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I really liked how we completely left my path that I wrote down for our interview here. It's all, you know, it's all written down where I wanted to go, and we're definitely going to go back to it. But I love how we ended up so quickly in a very important social topic. I mean, this is, you know, about our culture, about our social upbringing, about living together. It's so much, and it's nice to hear it from you. And I know that you are very critical about the social part of social media. So you pretty much showed it right away that that's something you really think about, that it's not about just creating a great filter that makes you look like plastic and everything is fine, but there's actually a great mind behind it. And I think your point of view, I would say right now, is communication, like proper real-time communication and not virtual reality. Let's talk about you and your way slowly towards Berlin. I also read that you worked as a VJ. Was it in clubs or at concerts? Where did you work as a VJ?
So that was when I was living in Paris. So I was studying and I was working in bars. Mm-hmm. We had a bar crew called Diago Crew, and we were doing I was working in clubs. I was working in all the biggest techno festivals in Paris back in the day, mm-hmm. the Weather Festival, there was the Peacock Society, and there was like all the blanks. It was amazing parties, and we had this crew of bar people. And so I got connected to the nightlife very quickly in Paris. So I was, during the day, I was like studying or doing cultural work. Mm-hmm. Or internship, and during the night I was like working in bars or doing VJ. So I was really connected. When there was a big parties, I was doing like VJ for one artist, so it was more like live shows. Mm-hmm. And I was doing the video of it. I did video mapping as well. So I was not attached to one club. Mm-hmm. It was more like for one specific event. I'm working with one artist that fits the visual universe we're fitting to the music. Also, my ex-boyfriend is a light engineer, mm-hmm. And so he was touring a lot to do live shows, and we were like doing light, and I was doing like visual. So we had, we're like really in the scene. We knew a lot of people in Paris. Mm-hmm. And also a friend of mine built a musical label, and there was like 5 to 6 artists that we were like following and touring. So I did live show, like for example, when one artist was touring, I did the live show from the full live show setup with the technical projection, and we were like going in, I don't know, in France, in Lyon and stuff, and yeah. Like this kind of like, it's a different lifestyle.
Yeah,
it's not office. Is
why did you leave the scene? Why did you decide to leave VJing behind?
I was not feeling great in Paris. Paris is less open-minded. Mm-hmm. I remembered, so I worked a lot, and I took my first holidays, and I took 1 week or two in Berlin, mm-hmm, as my first holidays trip by myself. And so I arrived in Berlin, and it was 1st of May, so imagine the huge festival in the street and meeting everybody. Everybody's so happy. It's like La Fiesta in Berlin, the day of work. So after this holiday trip in Berlin, I realized that like actually in Europe, people were way more open-minded, way less critical, and the lifestyle is way easier, like in a everyday life basis, mm-hmm, no? Like you're going to a restaurant or you're going to a bar, the size of the flat itself is way bigger. You breathe mm-hmm, because Paris is, you, the lifestyle in Paris is like being a survivor.
Yeah, it's very,
it's a survival mode.
Yeah, it's a very condensed kind of living, because you have, yeah, to have real money to live in a proper apartment where you can breathe. Otherwise it's quite tiny. And it's also quite hectic in Paris, I would say. You know,
it's
everyone is on the run, you know. Mm-hmm.
All the time you're on the run. Mm-hmm. You never rest, mm-hmm, you never think, you always have a little pressure on your shoulders, and you always have to go here and there. You take the subway, you have to run, you have techniques to get a seat in the subway, you have techniques to get faster in this way, to get out of the tourist kind of places. It's really like, also there is a lot of like, you can be harassed on the street. Mm-hmm. If you're a woman and you don't know how to talk to people in one way, then like they're gonna harass you. So it's survival mode. Mm-hmm. You like here with your backpack and you're like, tuk, 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 I'm going here, da, da, I do this, da, da, da. But you never had time to really, relax, mm-hmm, and think and reflect to yourself. And in Berlin, I found this. So after this trip, I just moved. Mm-hmm. I was like, why I will lose my time in Paris where I can have a better life in Berlin, and I can like work on myself, take some time for myself, meet new people, meet new art scene, meet new things, discover, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I moved. I met people, I worked on my portfolio, I did like some project here and there, I did like some workshop because I was still very connected to the digital art scene. So I was doing, I don't know, video mapping here, a workshop in Kazakhstan, I invited here and there. But my main goal was to find a real job so my mother can feel relaxed.
Yeah.
Because having a freelance lifestyle and being in the art world and like you don't really have money and you're always like to the next thing to survive. But it's really stressful for my mother, you know, like I've always been the black sheep as doing like experimental things and like things that she has no clue about. And so I found a job in advertising agency. First of all, I did my website. And it was kind of like very experimental website. It was an underwater portfolio in a 3D universe, and it went viral. So it was my first thing that went viral. I was in reposting in all the designer and web websites and you know, like this kind of scene, like design and digital art and things. And so every time I did interview to find a job, like in studio or in advertising agency or here and there, every time people were like, oh, I saw your website. So okay. It really helped me to get into showing my portfolio and all the other works I was doing. But I was not doing only like, I always been into new technologies and experimental stuff. I think it's way more interesting. Yeah. I like to do things that I haven't seen before, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I found this job and I got I remember I had two creative directors. One was more design, so he really appreciated my technical side of things. And the other creative director was conceptual. And he saw the potential of conceptual work and storytelling I had in my work that I even didn't know. Mm-hmm. And because of him, I learned so much. I learned so much about like, okay, actually like making things that make sense is way more important for me than like making things that looks good. And before, when I was in Paris, when I was doing VJ, I was in the visual art field.
So it was the other way. It was the other way around. It was about looking good and not making sense. It was just like maybe speaking to the heart, but not so much to the like conceptual part of the brain.
yeah, the story.
Yeah,
you know, like the thing that what does it talk about? Mm-hmm. I really believe that we can contribute to inspire the future as well. Like we can do works today, and we have the possibility to do works that can seed new ideas and maybe shift the future to something that like is more interesting or can trigger other concepts and trigger discussion. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to do works that triggers discussion, so everybody talks about it and then it gets into the mind of the people and then it can bring an idea to someone else mm-hmm. that will do something else and et cetera, et cetera. That's why my work is very, sometimes when you look at the big picture, it's very eclectic.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to do things that make sense right now and that makes people think or talk about it.
Your work is a virtual reality work, so it's not here. We can't hold on to it. But I do want to get a bit more hands-on because I want to know about your work situations and how you actually create. So I read that Spark AR Studio started in 2017. And from 2018, designers like you were able to design a face filter to be released on Instagram, for example. And you did that. And also I read that in a dark apartment in Moabit, a little district or Keith.
Not so dark. I had access to the rooftop, so it was amazing. No, it was amazing.
But you did like you did like the dark to see the screen properly, so you could work.
Of course, of course. But today I'm reaching for light.
Okay. What was the first face filter? And just for someone like me who is more into analog creating face filters by maybe drawing and painting on a piece of paper, how does the work look like when you create a face filter? Maybe very simple so people like me can understand.
Totally. So how it started, you know, like, so I was working in advertising agency and my work as a digital creative is what I'm always doing, mm-hmm. is always finding new technology, things that make sense to communicate or to tell a story, no? So I digged into Spark AR because I thought it was interesting to start using it, because back in the days, face filter was like just dog faces and like something very gimmicky. Yeah. And it was not really introduced in the society, but like there was like way more potential. I could see that there was way more potential than just like dog faces and stuff. What I liked about Spark AR, for me, it's a reduced way of reduced tool like Unity 3D. Unity 3D is a game engine, so you can do like augmented reality, virtual reality, you can do video game, you can build world and stuff. And I was using a lot this this software before. So when I jumped into Spark AR, it was kind of familiar for me. I kind of understood how it was working. And I'm not like the most technical person. Like I know how to write a small script, but like it's not my thing. Mm-hmm. I'm more like the creative side. Mm-hmm. What I liked about Spark AR is that as I'm really into the photography world. I work with photography. I do photography myself, and photography is about playing with lights. Playing with light, you place light on the scene, or you play with light to highlight the model.
Mm-hmm.
When there is a model, no, and so I can, for me, I used augmented reality at the beginning to do a virtual studio. So the model is myself, or is you, or is everyone, and I started to place lights as I would love to place lights on a studio photography studio. So I put a light here, I put a light there, and then suddenly the face of the user is highlighted in one way. You can play with colors, you can make them rotate. It's an interactive photography studio. So this is how I started, but then like depending on how complicated is the filter, it can go as far as like some complex nodes that I'm connecting together, which is like more programming, and it's a different story. But the base of the base of the base of my work was just like a virtual studio.
Yeah, okay.
Playing and with lights and colors.
And the outcome, I mean, for example, Beauty 3000 is your probably most famous face filter, which got used over 500,000 at least, if not many times more. It has a very cyborgy aesthetic. And you said it before, it was cute with dog and rabbit ears and nothing else. And there it was, this shiny kind of plasticky skin as if you were wrapped in foil. It looks very unnatural, but at the same time very beautiful. I have my headline here, it says, "Let's talk cyborgs." The next question is a bit longer because I have to tell you a little story. I once had an interview with a female artist who studied computational art here in Berlin. And she said it was a very male course, like very binary, focused only on the technical side of generating a design, for example. But her work was based on biology. She's a very great nerd as well, very biology nerd. And her classmates didn't understand or didn't want to understand the biology side of computational art. And that's why, and now I get into the point and question, she read Donna Haraway's essay, A Cyborg Manifesto. Mm-hmm. It's a feminist socialist essay to show how being stuck in binaries creates power, which we know. Mm-hmm. I mean, because when you have just two genders, for example, one must be the stronger one, you know?
Yeah.
And a cyborg destroys the idea of binaries because it's a hybrid of a biology being, and a robot.
Yeah, so of there like is no gender.
There is no gender. And there's also, you can't really say, is that just a technical thing? Or does it have blood and, you know, breath going on, like the biology side of it? Was that also like your understanding of creating the cyborg aesthetic? Was that breaking the binaries?
No, that was not my goal into working with cyborgs. I just think we are all cyborgs today, and we don't really realize it, but it's a thing. We all with our devices, we all using social media, Google Map, everything to do anything. it's like a part of ourselves. It's just not connected to our body yet. Mm-hmm. And I think it will be. And it's just the fact to realize this. And I'm also like, I'm a freak. I love cyborgs. I love Blade Runner. I love this type of movie, like Ghost in the Shell, where the artificial intelligence or the technical side of things are emerging with the body. Mm. Yeah, I think it's our future.
Yeah, I mean,
I really do think
that's your point of view, and you're super nerdy, but still your cyborg beauty filter appeals to so many people. It's so successful. Why do you think? Do you have an idea why it's more successful than a regular beauty filter?
Of course. First of all, it was the first filter that went viral.
Mm-hmm.
Before, at this time, there was like the dog face and the cat face and like all of this kind of thing, but there was nothing really fashion, really beauty related, mm-hmm. really. And Instagram is huge for fashion and for beauty. Like, it's huge. And so I think it made sense at this time where so many people are using Instagram to show themselves, to be fashionable, to be beautiful, but it was the perfect balance. I think, so first of all, people use social media to storytell themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using Instagram to tell my story, to show my life, to show a part of myself, or a facet of myself, or to build a character, but it's about me.
Yeah.
The Beauty 3000 effect that I did doesn't transform your face. It's still you. It's transparent enough. It's minimal enough that you still recognize yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can still storytell your own story with it. It's not going to hide your face. It's not, et cetera, et cetera. So it was really balanced. And the fashionable aspects of it made a lot of sense at this time in the beginning of 2019, where there was nothing like this. And it was like a different way to use face filters. I think that's why it went so popular.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know, it's really, it's kind of, I like this kind of work where you use it and suddenly you have like a visceral kind of reaction with your body. And it's kind of fascinating.
It's very editorial. I think the whole time of editorial fashion shoots, for example, where they want to do something different from what we know, from the typical, I don't know, using Photoshop to make the legs look smaller, longer, whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting because, yeah, it was the beginning of 2019. And now we're almost at the end of 2020. 2 years in Instagram is actually a lot of movement. Something when we think more analog would be like a growth between 2001 and 2020, because the internet and Instagram especially is very fast. I understand that. Talking about how fast Instagram is, your face filter went viral. And your follower number went like through the roof, like you're from 4 digits to six digits, and you currently have over 600,000. How did it make you feel, especially because you're like this in-between generation that grew up with none of that, and now you're like a star of this new generation?
Man, I don't know. Like, I freaked out. I don't know. As I said, like, it was really, really overwhelming. And like most of the people like don't see this side of things. And I had to learn a lot and understand how things works. It changed my life.
Mm-hmm,
no?
Definitely.
Like, it gave me a new perspective, but I had no choice to go back to before.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried. But I'm really happy. I mean, today I'm really happy about this, and I'm working on it. I want to build my company, and I love the work I'm doing. But I'm not doing only face filters, of course. Mm-hmm. But my work with face filters, I really enjoyed it. But yeah, it was very overwhelming. I did a burnout. I accepted too many jobs. I had to find my balance now with all of this. Mm-hmm. I think the worst thing was like when you became successful, suddenly like some friends or some people that you don't heard about since years, they like, hey, like being your best friend. Mm-hmm. But your best friends, you know who are your best friend. You can't fake it, no? Mm-hmm. So the reaction from my social surrounding was like the most surprising side, not in a good way. But you learn, huh? You learn all of this.
It seems like you had a really fast track life experience to that. The last 2 years, you experienced what a lot of people don't experience in their whole life, actually, like, you know, finding out who your real friends are, work-life balance, very important to build your own company. But you were prepared for your success. You said to your sister, this will make me famous.
Yes, that's true. But I wasn't prepared. I just knew that was a good work. I had this visceral feeling. And this is what I'm trying to find when it triggers something you can't even explain with words. And it talks about a lot of things and it makes sense and you understand kind of the story of it. Like it refers to the future, it's talking about beauty and it's on you. And it's provoked something like in your body that like, fuck, this is good. Mm-hmm. And so I told my sister, yeah, Nat, you will see this is gonna blow, I know. But I didn't expect it that it would blow like this. Like that was, and I was not prepared at all. I was not prepared.
And all of the sudden someone like Billie Eilish knocks on your virtual door and wants to work with you.
Yes, and so many others. And I remember I have an Apple Watch and I was wearing it. And my Apple Watch was telling me, giving me some warnings because my heartbeat was so high. It was like, calm down, because I was receiving emails all the time. Like, and the biggest brands. And I was like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? How to deal with this? Like, super scary. Because of course I want to do, but it's.
Your life changed tremendously from the beginning of 2019 till now, because you said the biggest brands, and I just have Nike in my head because you moved to Portland and the headquarters of Nike is in Portland. Yeah, exactly.
And my move to Portland was, so when Nike reached out to me, it was before I went viral. They were already interested with my profile because of the variety of my digital work that makes sense, and they were looking for profiles like me, like mine, and the process into all of this is very long anyway. And then I went viral, and I was like, okay, I'm not sure, I don't know what to do, I'm like, I don't know. So I did a lot of freelance. I stopped working in advertising agency and I did the things I wanted to do. Also, the cool thing with having so much reach is that you have the opportunity to speak out and to project that make sense. So I did a lot of talks and I did project like the digital dress. And for me, those projects are topics that are necessary to talk about today, not 2 years ago, and not last year, and not today, because it's actual, it makes sense. And so I did it because I can. So I'm gonna, I can do it, so I will do it. But middle of the year I was really overwhelmed and I didn't like my lifestyle at all. because everything changed and I was, yeah. So I accepted the job at Nike and I wanted to go back to like to a regular lifestyle kind of life. So going to the office, having a team, working with team, thinking about da-da-da. Yeah, and it was cool. It was an amazing experience. But also I was missing I wanted to go back to my personal work. And then the coronavirus outbreak happened. And I was like, okay, I'm going back to Europe. and I moved to Spain the first day of the confinement, of the lockdown.
Okay.
I was so lucky and I don't know how all of this happened, but it happened and I'm here and I got really lucky to think about moving and just doing it and coming back to Europe. And yeah, but like now I learned all of this and now I know what I want to do and how to develop myself personally. I have the thoughts way more clear than I had in the middle of the year 2019. And also like I met my father also, like so many things happened to me in 2019. It was like a really, really strong and full of changes, life changes 2019 for me. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just said you now know what you wanna do. What do you wanna do?
Now, I want to continue to do what I'm doing. I want to build a company, and I start to have the people I'm working with. So I have my manager. I have a girl from Paris that is doing video. That we have a really similar universe, and I love what she's doing. So I can do like more highly produced work with her. I have a super cool creative technologist that I love to work with. It's like with time, you meet the people that you realize the communication is good. We have a good workflow. I want to work with you, and so I want to establish this. So, you know, like step by step, you start realizing that like, okay, so things start to look like a team. Things start to look like something concrete. I want to continue to do this. And so I want to continue to do like face filters and like push the boundary of what's possible with it and like create storytelling and express myself with face filter. But I also still want to do speculative design and like talk more about the future.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there with the speculative designs. I have to think of your augmented fictional technical jewelry collection.
Yeah, exactly.
Something like that, you mean?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. This type of projects are for me like way more interesting. Not way more, it's different. It's something I like to do, is to talk about possible futures. And
how does the dress you did last year fit in there? Does it still fit in there,
or of course.
Is it last year?
Yeah, for me it's like another project that like triggers discussion, that talks about a possible future. Because today like we all using digital tools, digital techniques, and we are using it to make art, but there is no regulation. It's so different, and we have to establish and ask the right question to try to fix it. Because you go to a gallery, like the when you're an artist and you do like a sculpture, a painting, something tangible, It's already established. You know how to sell it. You know how to prove that it's the real one. You have like certifications, etc., etc. When it's something non-tangible, the work, suddenly we don't know how to do this. And the blockchain part of it was something that made sense for it, because blockchains is like a digital wallet where you have like all of the data. And if you compare it to like a certification, which is a paper signed, it's the same. It's just two different forms. So
Yeah.
There is only one wallet for this digital dress. It's on the blockchain, and one owner, and then the second owner and the third owner will be like written in this, in this, in this wallet. So
yeah,
is the way to prove that is the, it is the real work.
Yeah, I just have to give the listeners a quick background because we jumped right into this dress.
Oh, yeah.
You designed a dress last year, which didn't exist in real, only in digital.
Yeah.
And it's non-textile. There's no cloth. It's an only virtual dress. And it was sold in an auction for $9,500.
Yeah. So this project was made with... so this project was made with... Dapper Labs, which is an incubator, or I don't really know. They're the one that founded CryptoKitties, for example. They're really into cryptocurrencies, and like they do amazing work that like establish new things with blockchain technologies. And Dapper Labs, which is a digital fashion studio. They do digital collection, digital clothes, and they design the dress. And so we got in conversation, all of us three together, and we thought about making this project because it made sense and it triggers the right topic of discussion, talking about sustainability, talking about like digital ownership, talking about the future, but is today, and the way people use social media as well, because everybody like show themselves on pictures with like amazing clothes, but like if you use these clothes just one day, then it's a waste somehow. Like the haute couture is not something that you're gonna use. It's gonna be like most of the time in your closet.
Yeah, and it's like a status symbol to own it because it costs like a car
exactly.
or something.
But at the end of the day, if you can have it digital, it's the same because you're going to have it on your Instagram anyway. So it's going to exist. It's going to be real. But if it exists in real life or not, what does it change? Also, the thing I like with my work and the digital fashion is that you can push boundary of design and creativity. You can do things that are not possible in the real life. And this is what I love to do, is to do things that you can't have in the real life. If you can design a dress, why not the dress has no gravity? Why not the dress isn't made by, it can be water, it can be wood, it can be like a dress in concrete. It can be things that like I would love to see in real, but it's not possible. So I can do it in the digital. And now I think for me, this is what makes sense. I don't like to use digital technology and digital tools to do things that already exist in the real life. It's not fun.
Yeah. Okay. Now I understand your approach to the future of fashion, because I was also thinking when I read so many interviews with you and articles about you, especially also about the dress, that I was imagining, because I said you said something similar, I was imagining us just wearing like a nude overall body, and then we have like a virtual reality or augmented whatever reality glasses on, and then just scan the person and see what they're the virtual dressing is like.
But already happening.
Okay.
And I'm totally
so
with
off.
It. Yeah, but no, I love this too, because I think maybe one day we're going to be like this. But if you think about video game today, video games is a 3D world where you can embody a character, which is you or not, and you can wear digital clothes. You can wear whatever you want. You can own, if you play Fortnite, for example, you can buy skins. So you look like the way you want to look. And so I think it's already happening today, but not in the physical world. But if augmented reality develop more and more, and we have like, I don't know, digital lenses or digital glasses that makes us able to see augmented reality in the real life, and mixed these two worlds, I think it might happen. I think it's a cool vision to wear like a bodysuit and then like see everybody with the digital layer of crazy outfit. But I don't think it will happen like in the next 40 years. I think I might be dead already, but I am fascinated by this kind of vision.
Yeah, I now understand. I now understand why you always say in your interviews that your future is no dark Black Mirror future. It's something happy and delighted, maybe more female than like this kind of male tech scene darkness that's projected onto our screens in films and series.
I mean, I love this vision of like very dark and like super foggy and post-apocalyptic kind of mood. I love it. But if we can do something a little bit more fresh and a little bit more elegant, and then why not, no? There is few artists like that does this, but I haven't seen in the digital art scene, the real established digital art scene, I haven't seen something very elegant that makes fashion and photography and, you know, something a little bit more less detached to our society.
But more really taking part of it right now. So we can also relate to it a bit more.
Exactly.
To the dystopian views that we're getting on Netflix, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Understand that. You said it. You already said it. You had a burnout. You know, like in the midst of creating your own company. You are a freelancer, and I know for myself as a freelancer, you work weird hours. It's Saturday today, but Saturday afternoon, we could be out shopping for clothes or whatever, or just food, but we're sitting here and talking.
Yeah.
It's work. I really enjoy it, but it's work.
For me, it's not work.
So we're mixing work and pleasure, you know.
Yeah.
Do you have a structure or rituals that you... lose yourself again?
Of course. I mean, I have a structure, meaning like I know that from 9 to 6 it's office hours, and if I have to work with people, I'm more or less available. If I have to deliver something, I will be available. But I'm more like I follow my flow. I realize that like I'm working way more. The workflow is way more easy if I do it when I feel it. And if I feel it, if I feel designing Saturday evening in front of the TV, I do it. And if I don't feel it because I want to go out with my friend and have a beer, I go out with my friend and have a beer. And I just like, I learned how to listen to myself, because you become way more productive if you do the things the way you feels, the way it feels right to do it.
Yeah. Having your own company and being successful now, I'm just thinking of your sister again, that who was like your like a role model in like a proper adult lifestyle.
I mean, she's still my role model forever. Yeah. She's my older sister, so this is how it is.
but do you feel more accomplished now? How you are now? How you set up now?
Of course, of course. Yeah, right now I know myself. I had to learn how to know myself and to know that maybe I can be disorganized, but I know how to deal with it, and it's fine. I know that I'm not good with writing text, but I'm really good at discussing with people. And so I know my strength and I know my weaknesses. And if I have to deliver something that implies my weaknesses, I had to learn that, okay, maybe it's better to work with a writer.
Yeah.
Because the process of writing for me, I can do it, but it will take more time and it will be more painful. But having a discussion with a writer that can understand my thoughts and my feelings and like put them in words is way more interesting for me. So yeah, I mean it's a lifetime learning and process to know how to learn yourself and know how you work, what works for you, what doesn't work for you. And life and work for me is the same principle.
Mm-hmm. That's a very big, big important part of staying healthy, to have like your mindset analyzed and proper, self-reflecting and feeling yourself, like finally feeling yourself, what's good and what's not so good for you. How do you stay healthy otherwise? Do you have certain like sporting routines or
I do nature a lot of walks? Sport.
Okay.
I do a lot of sport. I love it. It makes me feel good. Yeah. During the lockdown, I learned everything about diet. So mm-hmm. now I'm not a freak, but I really take care about what I'm eating. I did a DNA test as well, and I learned a lot about like my type of, even though I knew it, but like it just like put in words that like, so for example, I'm more like a carnivore kind of person. I need a lot of protein. I have a lot of strength, and that's probably why I like to do sports so much. Like, I don't know, I can build muscle very easily somehow. Mm-hmm. It's me, I don't know, I'm like this. But yeah, learning about diet and knowing that I like to do sport and all of this is important for me. I mean, I always been super active anyways, so you know, as you understood, my life goes really fast, and mm-hmm. I think it never stopped to be so fast.
Do you take track of your screen time? Do you keep track of
My screen time is terrible. I don't want
okay. So we don't talk about it. We just put a blind eye on that.
I'm all over the screens. Like I have two phones. I'm always working on my laptop. My laptop is my second, I don't know, is a part of me, no? Mm-hmm. Okay, my phone is a part of me like everybody, but my laptop is even more like, it's my tool to live, to work, to create, to do anything. I just need my laptop. I can go everywhere in the world. I'm traveling a lot. I'm discovering places. I'm going in a road trip, whatever. But if I have my laptop, I can be, I can work. So, yeah.
I have one last question. You said you made it to Spain just before the lockdown, when Corona, when COVID-19 started.
Yeah.
Has it affected you and your work otherwise as well? Because I'm thinking, I mean, of course, you're remote. You can work anytime from anywhere. It's a lot of digital stuff, but you do need clients to work for, I guess. So are your clients affected and your work is less than it was before because of that?
Not really.
Okay.
To be honest.
Okay.
Like, I always, and even if I don't have work, I still work. Even if it's not for money, I still do some project that like the augmented senses project was like an idea that came to my mind during the lockdown. And for me, it's work, but it's not really work. It's like, it's work, but I'm not doing it for money. But it brings clients and interest anyway, so yeah, no. I mean, it's okay. For now, it's okay, but I don't know as well. You know, I think it's affecting everybody. Mm-hmm. And if the economy goes down, it's going down for everybody.
Yeah.
So for now, it's okay. And maybe the budget are less high than before. But yeah, this COVID thing is a bitch anyways. So the cool thing is that, again, like the world is changing all the time. New technologies are appearing all the time. Us as human being, we have to adapt ourselves anyway.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't work, one type of work doesn't work anymore at some point, then you need to evolve, you need to adapt, you need to find what works today. And if something was working well last year, it might not work next year. So you need to adapt it to make it work tomorrow.
Yeah. No no stagnating. Like, we really have to keep on moving, also to keep our brain fit, because if we get locked into like one pattern, we will not only get bored, but I think very unhappy as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know that I'm against doing over and over the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never done over and over the same thing, and I'm not gonna do it. I just know that life will bring me things that I'm gonna be interested to work with, and I'm gonna do it if it makes sense right now, and tomorrow is gonna be something else, and it's gonna be super exciting.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about like what's coming new, and how we can use new tools and new technologies and anything in different ways. I like to merge different, if we can merge like one technique and one tool with a culture or subcultures and make them meet, this is where amazing things happen.
Okay.
Experimentation. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Joanna, for giving a very, very deep insight into your own life. That was a lot. You didn't have to share, but you did. And also a very interesting and kind of bright perspective into the future. So thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your time. That was fun.
Thank you, too. Thank you, too. Yeah. I'm very honest, and I'm a very honest person. I can't talk in different way. Like, we can do that anytime. I'm going to be talking about what I think and my life, and because all of this is together, no?
Yeah. So I'm just going to say au revoir.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. I hope to see you in real life one day.
Yeah, me too. A bientôt.
Tschüss.
Tschüss.
Joanna Jaskowska, the Instagram face filter queen, a very interesting person and also a very nice one. I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. And if you did, maybe you leave us some feedback at Apple or Instagram. And by the way, this is the last episode of 2020. Our podcast team is taking a little break over Christmas and New Year's. That means we will hear each other next year. So long, stay healthy, and goodbye. Das war der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast.
Abonniert den Podcast bei Apple, SoundCloud, Spotify oder Deezer.
Wir sehen uns im Club.
Bis dann.